Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next, a dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Good morning, and welcome to What's Next. My name is Michael Loss, the associate producer of What's Next. And today we're excited to bring you another episode where we sit down with some of the candidates for the upcoming 2025 Buffalo mayoral election. And with us in the studio today, we welcome in State Senator Sean Ryan, representing the 61st New York State Senate District. Senator Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great to be here. It's great to be in this forum. We have, you know, a few minutes to talk about important issues for the city of Buffalo.
And we are thrilled to have you sitting here for a long-form conversation. We'll be joined shortly by our guest host, Akua Menz-Adu of Clementine Gold Group. But also with me today is WBFO reporter Jim Fink. Thanks for joining us, Jim.
Thank you, and good morning to everybody.
Good morning, Jim.
Senator, thank you for coming in. The obvious question, why do you want to be mayor of Buffalo?
So I'm running for mayor because, you know, Buffalo deserves better. My mom was a teacher. My dad was a Buffalo firefighter, you know, and they exemplify the spirit of people who, you know, pitch in, help their communities. And there's a lot of people out there, you know, working to make the city of Buffalo a better place. But we need a city government that works hard for us. And you could really see after 20 years of neglect, the cracks in the city are starting to show.
How do you get that swagger back into the city of Buffalo, both on the personal level for the residents and also people may want to come in and invest or bring businesses? How do you get that swagger back?
I mean, Buffalo really just got to break out of their austerity mindset and really embrace a can-do growth mentality. So for so long, Jim, we've prided ourselves on a community that if you need a new roof, well, let's just patch it with tar. And the city's really adopted that mindset to its detriment. But we've seen in the last decade, the city's our population has actually grown. But we haven't figured out how to embrace a growth mentality. And that's what we need in order to keep Buffalo a vibrant city that's on the move. You know, we need to figure out how to embrace growth, not just cut, cut, cut.
So how do you embrace growth? How do you get the private sector to invest in the city of Buffalo? How do you get people to want to move into the city of Buffalo?
Yeah, it's a multi, you know, faceted approach, right? But you start with the basics. Can you fix your potholes? Can you plow your streets? If you call the city's help number, do people actually respond? So it's got to start with the small things, and you've got to demonstrate that you have the capacity as a city to take care of the run-of-the-mill everyday problems, like the functioning government. Can you open your pools? Do your summer rec centers work? Are your senior services programs working? So you've got to be able to take care of the commonplace, and then you have to have the ability to look at some of our larger systemic issues. You know, we have to look at our segregation. We have to look at our racism. We have to look at neighborhoods left behind. We have to look at our failing commercial strips. But you have to start with doing the basics that people come to expect. But here's the thing. People's faith in the government of the city of Buffalo is decaying. Each year, as services have declined, people don't think their streets are going to be plowed. You know, they don't think they're ever going to get their potholes fixed, their curbs put in. So we really need to restore the people's faith. But we know that those same people, they're out there working to make their city better. You know, people are doing neighborhood trash pickups. There's all sorts of innovative urban farming and food initiatives, you know, going on in the east side. And you go to the west side and there's a big vibrancy of new Americans and groups all coming together. But they all want the same thing. They want a safe city. They want a city that functions. They want their kids to be able to go outside and, you know, walk to school. So the community all wants the same thing. We just need a city hall that's on the same page.
How quickly can you turn this around? I mean, things don't happen on a turn on a dime. This is, sounds like a more long-term effort on your half.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to start by sort of, you know, conveying the hard work message, right? We have plans. We have competence. We're going to execute those plans. And you need to show to the people that you're working. But at the same time, you need to open up the table of who's decision-making powers. And you need to bring the community in and to have a conversation. You know, you need to go to Seneca Babcock, to their neighborhood groups, and say, what's going on with this neighborhood? You know, you need to go to the Jam Block Club around the Northland Corridor and say, what's happening with our neighborhoods? And, you know, almost every neighborhood group I go to, they'll tell you that the neighborhood is under stress and it's decaying. And they'll point to vacant lots and say, I used to have a neighbor who lived there. And they'll tell you the family who lived there, but somehow that house ends up demolished and now they have an overgrown lot next to them. So, you know, I have a plan to restore Buffalo's neighborhoods. I have a four-point housing plan.
What is your four-point housing plan?
So the first one is, you know, we have a shortage of houses, right? So, you know, we've done an aggressive demolition program for over a generation. And guess what? Well, it turns out we demolished too many houses because now we have more people than we have houses. But every time the city did a demolition, you lost a few thousand dollars from your tax base.
Yes.
What does that mean? That means that everyone else has to pay a little more taxes. So the city never got their arms around this concept that every time they demolished a house, you know, you're losing your tax base. It's like, you know, playing poker, right?
And you're also losing your critical mass in that neighborhood.
Everything. So, you know, it still costs the same amount of money to plow a street. It still costs money to keep the streetlights going, the sidewalks on. So you lose your critical mass. You know, you lose your tax base. So, you know, the first point is to help restore doubles. We have, I think, 4,000 vacant housing units in Buffalo.
Correct.
They're mostly owned by local people who are seniors and don't have money to get basic repairs done. So I was able to fund, and it's on the street right now, a state program. They'll provide either a $50,000 or a $75,000 grant to get your apartment back online, to get it up to all the standards, and to get people living in there. So in order to take stress off the real estate market, you need more housing units. The quickest, cheapest way to get housing units up is to take fallow doubles and get them back online. So that program's up and going right now. The second program that I was able to fund with $40 million in last year's state budget was a program to build brand new houses on vacant lots. And the houses will be aimed at people who make between $40,000 and $90,000. You know, think a certified nursing assistant who works at the medical campus. Their salaries will never be above $60,000, but that means they'd be priced out of every house in Buffalo right now. So we're going to build workforce housing with a state subsidy attached. You qualify for a mortgage based on your $50,000 salary. The state will come in and fill the rest of that gap, and the state subsidy will burn off 1/30th a year for 30 years. So that's a plan that's going to allow neighborhoods to actually rebuild. And I'm not talking areas of the city where there's dozens and dozens of continuous vacant lots. You know, that's a different housing program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking, you know, blocks like Glenwood that on one block have three vacant lots and the other block has four vacant lots. To take the parts of the cities that have what we call like a broken picket and a fence,
yep.
and to restore that. So you're really restoring the neighborhoods, and my housing plan is called the City of Good Neighborhoods because we pride ourselves on being the city of good neighbors, but our neighborhoods are under stress. And that program is going to be online before the first of the year. So community groups and community development corporations will be able to apply for this money, and we'll be able to start building new builds throughout the city of Buffalo.
Will there be a resident requirement that you have to stay in the house like 10 years, 15 years? Because that was when they rebuilt a lot of the houses along Prospect, that was the condition that you had to live in the houses for at least 10 years.
Yeah, in this program, it only works if you live there. So if you live there, you get 1/30th of the subsidy forgiven each year. So if you live there for just a few short years, you'll be able to sell the house, but not realize the subsidy. You'll just realize what you put in, you get back. So the subsidy will stay essentially for a generation. So we wanted to make it so if a CNA buys one of these houses, that if they leave after a few years, a house will still be affordable to the next certified nursing assistant. That's how we want to run this program.
How important is it for Buffalo to build these roots so that people have a sense of ownership of their block, their neighborhood? Doesn't that help turn the city around, go back to the swagger that we talked about a few minutes ago?
That's how you build strong neighborhoods, right?
Yeah.
Is if you've got we've ignored the housing program problems. The only consistent housing program the city of Buffalo's had for over a generation is demolitions. They have yet to come up with a program to take care of 14,000 vacant lots in the city of Buffalo. There's no plan to do that. You know, I have a plan to do that. I'm going to work with our state partners. But that's how you restore neighborhoods. I mean, you go to these neighborhoods and you talk to people, and it's really amazing to me, Jim. Longstanding residents will tell you exactly who used to live on what's now a vacant lot. They'll tell you if it was a single, if it was a double. There was a school teacher who lived there. They had three kids. But without those houses, you don't have those opportunities. So we grew by 10,000 people in the last census.
Correct.
Just that 10,000 put an incredible strain on our housing market. You know, rents that had been stagnant for 10, 15 years, you know, suddenly went up. Houses that were valued at $50,000 are suddenly valued at $150,000. So, you know, we don't want to have a real estate market that's, quote, that hot. We like to have a little extra supply, and that helps keep the rent prices down, and it helps make it so you can enter home ownership. The third part of my housing plan is, you know, the cheapest way to keep people housed and safe is to keep them in their current houses and apartments. We found out that the average cost of an eviction in Buffalo is the average, you know, amount in controversy is $1,200. And it used to be you would get evicted and you'd be able to go down the block to find another apartment. Well, those apartments are gone and those days are gone. Now when people are getting evicted, even if they have, you know, money for the next first and last month's rent, there's no apartments. County is housing people in hotels. It's costing them $8,000 a month.
Yep.
So we came up with a statewide pool of $10 million. Erie County is getting $1.5 million of that dollars, and they can use that money to help people to pay their emergency rental arrears. You know, think of a wage earner in Buffalo. You know, you're working a job, not a union job, not a lot of protections. You twist your ankle, and you can't work for 2 weeks. Well, when you get back to work, there's no way to recover those lost wages. You end up getting in a hole, and often you're in this awful situation. You know, do you rob Peter to pay Paul? Do you pay your utilities or do you pay your rent? But you get behind and you can't get back on your feet. So if we're able to do these one-shot rental assistance, it's going to help people stay in their homes, stabilizes neighborhoods, stabilizes family, and it reduces costs on the taxpayers. It's a win-win-win.
How much, the roots of your plan, how much has this come about through conversations you've had with constituents, city residents? You know, what was the genesis? What was the your thought process sure. for all this.
So, you know, you got to take it back a little bit in the Wayback Machine. So I'm an attorney by trade, mm-hmm. and I worked for Neighborhood Legal Services, where I represented tenants who are being evicted, people who are living in bad housing conditions, people who are victims of housing discrimination. So I lived in the housing world most of my adult life through some of the policies that I've been doing. And then before I got elected, I worked with Push Buffalo, and we created a thing called the Buffalo Neighborhood Stabilization Company, where we took a piece of the West Side and we came up with a development plan for that section of the West Side. And at that time, one of the biggest victories we accomplished, and we didn't know quite how important that victory would be, but we got the city to agree to do a demolition moratorium mm-hmm. on our parts of the West Side. So we had all these houses that had the city red X on it, which meant the city's going to come demolish it. And we got the city to stop those demolitions. Fast forward 20 years, all the houses that were marked for demolition have all been rehabbed. All have new families living in them. So I've been in the housing arena a long time. But the last few years, with the rising rents and rising property values, it really changed the paradigm in Buffalo. So I re-engaged with a new set of policies. And then the fourth policy, which I haven't accomplished yet, is a program to insulate homes.
Okay.
The average Buffalonian pays a high portion of their income to go to heating bills, because we all know the Buffalo story. The apartment's really affordable in July, but when your first gas bill comes in December or January, suddenly that gas bill could be as much as your rent, and that puts people behind. So, you know, we have an aggressive plan in New York State to burn less carbon, burn less gas, but we don't have a plan to accomplish that by insulating homes. So we want to work with the utility companies to make it so you can do utility scale insulation, where we can insulate thousands of homes. You know, if you go to our deadly winter storm, we had a high death rate in the city of Buffalo, but my constituents in the suburbs who also lost power, you know, no one froze to death, mostly because their homes were insulated. So the poorly insulated homes in Buffalo, you know, they quickly get cold and become dangerous. So we need to insulate our homes because it helps people keep money in their pockets,
mm-hmm.
helps fight global warming, but it also makes it so we have a safer community. But once again, it's about investing in our housing stock. You know, that's how we turn Buffalo around.
Does Buffalo have the money to do this? Because it's facing a very large deficit. We don't know the exact number yet. How will you find the money in the budget to do these programs?
So we do this through state partners. So, you know, New York State's always invested a lot of money in Buffalo. We want them to invest a little bit differently. So we want them to invest in our neighborhoods. So all the programs I just outlined, you know, the redo the doubles, the build new housing, the insulation, the eviction prevention, all comes through state government. So as mayor, I'll have active partnerships with New York State. I served in the assembly. I served in the Senate, and I'm very, very close to the governor. So we do these things through having active partnerships, and the city of Buffalo has not maintained active partnership with New York State, and it's been to their detriment.
Sounds like there's plenty to get into, but before we get into that, I would like to take a short break. You're listening to What's Next on WBFO.
Our mission at Buffalo Toronto Public Media is to serve our local community. And on WBFO, we do that by keeping you informed and connected to your community, whether it's by hearing from a local Black poet about what it was like to move from the inner city to the suburbs on What's Next.
So that emotional change with that culture change combined led me realize that basketball and being physical wasn't enough. I needed a way to figure out my emotions. So the first poem I wrote in the cafetorium of Sweet Home Middle School was Outcast.
Or it's exploring the East Side Garden Walk.
it's wonderful that we're seeing engagement in beautification and sharing gardens, because we believe that we can build more vibrant communities by sharing our gardens, by sharing our stories, and by building real connections between people. We came through as neighbors and cleaned the space out and began plot by plot putting plants in.
This is Public Media.
Hey, educators, you've been asking for it, and it's here. Reading Rainbow Stories is ready to help your students stay on track. Each story is paired with activities to help students strengthen cross-curricular skills, such as math and business in Lemonade for Sale.
Let's keep track of our sales.
Science and health in Germs Make Me Sick.
Usually, you feel better after a day or two.
Thanks.
But if you don't, you should see a doctor.
And history in Following the Drinking Gourd.
One of the worst things about slavery is that families were separated. Fathers, mothers, and children were oftentimes sold to different people.
Check out the new Reading Rainbow Stories collection on PBS Learning Media today to help your students stay on track.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And we are back at What's Next. My name is Akua Menzedu, guest host. And we're here with Senator Sean Ryan. Senator, we want to jump in and talk a little bit about the deficit. There's a lot of conversations that are happening on that level, what that deficit looks like, what, you know, communities within the city of Buffalo really are lagging from investment as well. So I want to get your sense on the deficit specifically.
So it took the city a dozen years to dig themselves into a big budget hole. And year after year, they tried to fill the budget hole with gimmicks. You know, one year the tobacco money comes in, one year the gambling money comes in. You know, and you see in their budgets, they always have these mysterious sources of income that never happen. A hotel tax, a music tax, a ticket tax. These things never come to fruition. But there's always some gimmick that allows them to close the hole. And you saw that, you know, the federal government gave cities more money than they've ever given them through the American Rescue Plan, you know, COVID bailout. And so many cities did unique, innovative things with this money, really changed their cities. Guess what the city of Buffalo did with money? They used it to close their budget deficit. It's mind-boggling the opportunities the city has consistently lost by the fact that for the last 20 years, they've just relied on gimmick after gimmick to close their budgets. But what happens that whole time? That's less city services. You know, community centers that operate less hours. I have a community center that I work with that they weren't able to program a big part of it all last summer because their air conditioning didn't work. And they called the city starting in the spring, said, we need to get this fixed. We need to get it fixed. City came in September with a very inexpensive part, took 2 hours, and it was fixed. But that meant children all summer long could not enjoy those programs because of basic things like the city can't take care of their community centers. And they can't take care of those community centers because they engaged in dishonest budgeting for way too many years. And who suffers? The citizens of the city of Buffalo, they suffer.
What have you learned about the city and its finances, and how can you fix that? Obviously, you can't wave a magic wand. It can't be fixed instantly. What needs to be done to gradually close this deficit? You know, it could be as much as $50 million.
Well, the remarkable thing in your question is we don't know how big the deficit is.
We don't.
Because the city doesn't even know their own budget, which is simply astounding. So, first of all, you got to figure out how much you're in the hole, and you know, people around Buffalo are really flipping out because they got letters in the mail saying what their new tax is going to be. And people all over the East Side are suddenly told their houses were triple what it used to be, and now you have to pay triple the tax. But people in my neighborhood and some of the wealthier areas of the city, we got letters telling us our taxes are actually going down. It just is an indicator of the city of Buffalo is just out of whack, and they got to get their act together. But part of getting your act together is actually putting in a budget every year based on actual numbers that make sense. And the city of Buffalo just got to get off their gimmicks. And I don't know if they're able to. But what I'm going to bring to there is a fiscal discipline. Now, mind you, fiscal discipline doesn't mean we're going to cut programs and we're going to cut things for the people of the city of Buffalo. We need to figure out where the money's going, you know, how much money's coming in. But we have to have an active partnership with New York State. It's going to take about 3 years to bail the city out of this problem because it took a long time to get into it. But we got to work with our partnership with New York State. We're going to develop a plan, and the plan is going to need a little help from outsiders. But the outsiders are only going to give us help once we show that we have command of our situation, and it's not going to be a forever help.
Would you reach out maybe to the private sector, maybe one of the banks, to say, can you lend us a financial analyst to go through our books and tell us where we really are?
Sure. Yeah, when I spoke before about we need to bring new people, you know, to the table, you know, that includes the private sector. But places like M&T Bank and Delaware North, I mean, they're right now keeping downtown standing. You know, they have thousands of employees who come into downtown every day. But you could talk to them and they'll tell you they have very little interaction with city government. You know, that's a problem. That's got to change. But, you know, we need to get our optimism back. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to have downtown a place where people go and they recreate. Remember the Gus Macker basketball tournament?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Well, where'd that go?
Yeah,
cooperation with the city of Buffalo made that infeasible. We used to have concerts down in Lafayette Square. But you talk to companies like, you know, so let's just go back to Delaware North for a second. They're in the entertainment business. You ask them, has anyone talked to you about how we can get downtown going again, get people here? And their answer is, no, no one's talked to us at all. So we need to bring more voices to the table, whether it's people like, you know, M&T in Delaware, New York, or whether it's like, you know, Alice Dehaney in from her Buffalo Go Green. Like, there's all sorts of people in Buffalo working super hard to make our city a better place, but we need to bring them all in together, and we need to make it so the city will work with groups, not be an obstacle, but actually, you know, join a partnership with the community, with the private sector, with the nonprofits to help make the city a better place.
You mentioned early on some of our troubled commercial districts. Let's focus in, hone in on downtown. We've had some recent examples of entities closing because they say there's less workers downtown. Projects that were supposed to bring in new apartment dwellers hasn't happened yet. So there's 30,000 less downtown workers right now because it's in the post-COVID world. Braymiller is closed because of it. The downtown bazaar closed because of it.
I gotta bring you back a little bit.
Yeah.
So Downtown Bazaar was a temporary location for Weedy.
Yep.
You know, they weren't planning on staying there.
And now Mark Supples is talking about putting a bar in there.
Mark Supples talking about, you know, going on it. But, you know, but also, you know, those places are places of optimism. But, you know, if you unwind that Downtown Buffalo supermarket story for a while, you know, we need to do an audit. The city needs to do an audit of what happened to the money that they gave to Braymiller's. I mean, the last chunk of money they gave them, the deal was Braymiller's would stay for 2 years, or they would have to pay the money back. Well, that money has got to come back to the city of taxpayers because they didn't stay, for 2 years.
No, they stayed for basically a year.
A year.
Yeah. Well, what's your math tell you then? That means the money's got to come back because they didn't fulfill their obligations. You know, if you think of food insecurity in the city of Buffalo, I understand we need downtown commerce, but we also can't do it by ignoring what's going on in our neighborhoods. We have food deserts all over the city of Buffalo, and the city somehow decided to put hundreds of thousands of dollars towards one individual store, you know, downtown. So I would like to see a look at all that money that went into that project. And I want to know where that money is. And I think that money has got to come back to the taxpayers. A deal is a deal.
What do we do about downtown Buffalo, though? How do you get the downtown swagger back?
You know, Buffalo Place used to be a thing that made downtown hop. Well, it's not hopping anymore, so we need to either re-engage Buffalo Place, re-engage, you know, new partners, you know, re-engage the idea of downtown concerts, downtown activities, daytime and nighttime. But we also have to look at our commercial vacancy rates. You know, are our commercial buildings going to be commercial long-term? Or are they going to turn into housing? And if they're going to turn into housing, we need to make sure that we're working with the private sector to make it so those transitions into residential go as quick as possible. And it doesn't take months and months and months to get your plans approved by the city of Buffalo. And the city doesn't become an obstacle to downtown development. But we got to have a downtown development plan. If we want downtown to be a neighborhood, which we've said for years, but no one's ever set goals on how many people we want to live downtown. We just say these words, but there's no plan and there's no execution of this plan.
What are you going to do about, speaking of downtown, the AM&A's building, the Buffalo Grand Hotel? These are two empty dinosaur buildings.
The city of Buffalo has just been absolutely derelict in holding private landholders accountable. You know, there's a receivership program that works, but the city of Buffalo pulled the plug on it a few years ago and has made it increasingly difficult to use that program. What does that program do? That program allows a nonprofit or a receiver to come in and say, you collect the rents, and the first thing you have to do with those rents is to make sure the building's up to code, your taxes are paid, you take a small fee, and the rest goes back to the landlord. We have landlords owning property in Allentown neighborhoods, Eastside neighborhoods, who are absolutely irresponsible. And proposals have been made to the city to take those properties over in receivership. The city has refused. Those are for small properties, Jim. Then you get to things like the car buildings down in the Cobblestone District.
Yep.
I did a press conference with Councilmember Nowakowski half dozen years ago saying the city's got to take these buildings over in receivership. Well, they refused. And what happened? Eventually there's a fire. And now it's going to cost so much more money to fix those buildings. AM&A's building is owned by a group of private investors. Mm-hmm. Why are we not holding them responsible? That building's not up to code. Someone in the neighborhood has a downspout that leaks and city inspectors come by, they're going to tell them to fix that. Why don't we hold these private interests to the same account? You know, we can go look at the Great Northern Grain Elevator, owned by a multi-billion dollar national corporation. We never made them keep that building up to code. You know, and finally, Mother Nature, you know, took a big chunk of that building away and the city rushed through a demo permit.
If you were mayor, would you have allowed that demo to take place?
No, if I was mayor, I wouldn't have allowed that demo to take place, nor would that building have been in that shape, because I would have forced the owner to do repairs. Just like you're required to keep your house up and you're required to keep our house up, why do we make it so the owners of AM&A's don't have to follow the same rules that every other resident of the city of Buffalo has to follow?
Do we even know who owns AM&A's these days?
We know who owns AM&A's, but I also know the city just adopts a hands-off, you know, attitude towards some of these inspections. And, you know, we can, if we want to stay on the inspection beat for a second, since I was a legal services lawyer and then I worked with disabled children, the problem of lead paint poisoning is the most avoidable problem the city of Buffalo has in front of us. You know, when I was working with disabled children, I would look at their medical records, and child after child had lead paint poisoning between the ages of 0 and 4 years old. Mm-hmm. They then become special needs kids, and you know they're behind. And almost all of those poisonings were so preventable because they got poisoned in apartments that weren't up to code, and they got poisoned because there was peeling paint and chipping paint. The city of Buffalo has a higher lead poisoning rate than Flint, Michigan had during their water crisis. And yet we have no active policy to stop it. Rochester took this program on 20 years ago. They cut their lead poisoning in half. New York City took this on 30 years ago. They cut their lead poisoning in more than half. City of Buffalo is supposed to be doing proactive rental inspections to help people not suffer from lead poisoning, and they're not doing it.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's conversations around how many structures the city actually owns and development. What does that look like? And there's a lot of conversations around, you know, there's scattered development that happens, right? Maybe on this side of town, there's a couple developments and a plan. But in general, there's a lack of a citywide plan in terms of development. So I just want to get your take on what that looks like. If you were mayor, what would your plans be in terms of neighborhood revitalization?
Yeah, you know, as we discussed, you know, it's the City of Good Neighborhoods housing platform. You know, first you have to get the doubles back online that are mostly owned by seniors. We got to get those doubles occupied. That takes some pressure off of our housing demand, makes the rents go down. And then we have to fully engage, you know, the program I got funded last year for $40 million to do scattered site housing development. So, you know, we're talking blocks that have one or two vacant houses on them, or sorry, vacant lots. We're going to get houses on those lots, but you do that by concentrating on neighborhoods, not concentrating on areas of the city where there's 50 greenfields in a row. You know, that's a different project, but we need to come back and restore our neighborhoods first, because in every one of those blocks with vacant lots, a neighbor will tell you what used to be there, and you build off your strengths. And the strengths are, you know, our current neighborhoods that have gaps. We need to fill in those gaps and strengthen those neighborhoods. And once we strengthen those neighborhoods, then we can go look at these areas of the city, you know, that have dozens and dozens of empty lots in a row. But the first thing you have to do is strengthen the neighborhoods.
Talking about strengthening neighborhoods. There are many churches that are scheduled to be closed. Some mm-hmm. have already closed. Would you, as mayor, sit down with the diocese and say, do you understand the impact of closing a church, what it has on the neighborhood?
You know that that ostrich mentality, where if you stick your head in the sand,
yep.
you can pretend problems aren't going on around you? There's all these problems going on in the city of Buffalo, and City Hall is being an ostrich. They stick their head in the sand and think the problems will go away. You know, Rite Aids have closed all around the city of Buffalo. Nobody from the city of Buffalo is in conversations with the Rite Aid corporations about a reuse plan. Dollar stores have closed all around the city of Buffalo. Nobody's in conversations about how to reuse those. And now on top of that, we layer in parish closings throughout the city of Buffalo that at one time is going to just dump these historic structures onto the market of a city that is hurting. And there's no conversations going on with the diocese about how to either slow walk some of the closures, and there's no conversations going on of, you know, creating a structure akin to the land bank to have the land bank take in these historic structures, and then we can put them back on the private market at a slower pace. You know, churches can be redeveloped, but the city can accept that if they're being redeveloped on a schedule. You can't put them all on the market at the same day and expect anything good to happen, except a lot of churches that will be in disrepair and steeples falling down. But once again, you got to pull your head out of the sand.
And some of these churches are historic structures.
Oh yeah, they're historic structures. You know, they're beautiful structures. You know, I visited a church 2 weeks ago on Emsley Street, been vacant for a generation. You know, two new Americans, husband and wife team, bought that church. They're going to redo the rectory. They're going to put a community space in, but it's taken a lot of money.
Exactly. We have to go to break, but we'll be right back.
This is Jack Cruiser with the Scoreboard on WBFO. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of The Scoreboard at WBFO.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media is glowing with accolades in 2024. The Webbies, Tellys, GLAAD Awards, and the New York Emmys recognize the brilliance in originals like Brave Spaces, sharing LGBTQ plus stories of triumph, Compact History, exploring the history that surrounds us, and Let's Go, bringing adventure to young, curious learners. Experience them all at WNED.org or on the BTPM YouTube channel.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And this is What's Next. My name is Akua Menzedu, guest host, and I'm here with Jim Fink as well. And Senator, we want to jump right back in, and I want to ask you a little bit about some systemic inequity, right? When we think about development in Buffalo, there's a lot of conversations around specific neighborhoods that have been left out. And when I think about specifically the tragic events at Tops on Jefferson Avenue, there's been this renewed focus on the east side. So I want to just get some understanding from you around what tangible steps you and your administration would take if you were mayor around driving change in that part of the city.
We have to start by acknowledging the problem. Right, Buffalo looks like Buffalo because a careful, strategic series of federal and state laws, you know, for a couple generations that enforced segregation, that redlined, that prevented investment in the east side and actually promoted disinvestment. So we had a lot of programs that unbuilt our neighborhoods, and we now have to, you know, turn that around. You know, if you're born on the east side of Buffalo, your life expectancy is almost 2 years lower than anyone else in the city of Buffalo. You know, it's shocking, but it's true. So we've had this historic disinvestment, but now we got to turn it around and acknowledge the policies that led to the east side looking like today's east side. And we need to turn it around and put more money back into the east side. And the program that I've been talking about, whether it's the Redo the Double program or the brand new housing, it allows money to come back into the east side, but it allows people to build generational wealth. All too often, if an elderly person's living in the double on the east side, by the time they pass, the house has very little value, or there's so much repairs that need to be done, the family members sell it. And it used to be if you sold a house in Buffalo, it would go to somebody else who lives in 716. Well, now there's a lot of out-of-towners starting to buy property. And the last thing they're going to do is fix that property up. You know, they're just going to try to take money out of it. So with this program, we put $75,000 into a double, get it back online. Grandma who's living there gets more income coming into her monthly checking account. But it also allows, you know, her to continue to reinvest in that house. And when she finally does pass, there's wealth that'll be transferred. And the same thing with the brand new housing program. So it's designed for people who make between $40,000 and $90,000 a year. It'll allow them to back into a house where, you know, if you're working at the med center making $50,000 a year, you're eligible for probably a $125,000 mortgage. Well, new home constructions are close to $400,000. So you'll take your mortgage out for the full amount. State will come in with a subsidy. That subsidy is forgivable, 1/30th. A year. You live in that house for a generation, and now you have generational wealth, and that wealth could pass on. But these programs are designed to be small, and they're designed to be small because we want emerging developers, emerging contractors, WMBEs, to be able to come in and take a chunk of these projects to show a track record and then come back, you know, for the next round.
How important is it, sorry for interrupting, but how important is it, especially to get that first major development in? I'm thinking like the Genesee Gateway project that C.B. Emanuel is working on at Jefferson and Best. That's a $41 million project, housing anchored. There is a community center aspect to it, but it's mostly apartment anchored. How important is it to get that next project in, to get, you know, we've talked for 2 years about rebuilding the East Side, starting it with Jefferson Avenue. It hasn't happened. There's been a lot of lip service. What do we need to do to get that first project going?
I would say, you know, we need to change our focus a little bit. So the big projects, they often take all the focus, right? And they're mm-hmm. super expensive. But we often will put a big project on a corner of the street that has 10 vacant lots and a bunch of rundown houses on them. And if you talk to the people of the city of Buffalo, they'll tell you they'd like to live in neighborhoods. They want to live in singles and doubles and triples. They don't really want to live in a four-story building. So, you know, we need to let those projects happen, but at the same time, we have to have a more of a neighborhood focus of rebuilding blocks, block by block. And some of the money that came in after the tragic shooting at Tops, it's going. I mean, you know, the Golden Cup, they rent. Mm-hmm. They own a building one block down Jefferson. I was in that building a couple weeks ago. That building, it's up and going, and it's, you know, because of funding from New York State, Preservation Buffalo Niagara is the agency that's helping to administer the money. So that's coming back up on Jefferson. I visited another store recently that's going to have three storefronts and a gym in back. Buffalo police officer owns the building. He's been struggling with it for years, so we're putting this capital in, and that's working. And, you know, a project that I've been keeping an eye on, you know, they're not the big 500 unit apartments, but it's, you know, the Kearns Avenue Bowling Center, small neighborhood bowling center. State came in and, you know, told the owner that we got some state money here for you, but you have to be able to put in this much money. Well, his bowling alley's closed and he's not generating an income right now. So we were able to come in with our doubles program because there's two units above it. And the state is going to be able to count the money from the doubles program as his put in. But if we want to rebuild neighborhoods like the Kearns Avenue area, we have to make sure there's anchors there. And sometimes the anchor is just one viable small business. So that provides a place for people to have, you know, birthday parties, first communions, retirement parties. So it's a real community anchor, just like the Golden Cup is going to be a community anchor. It already is, but it's super small. Well, that they're going to have a triple the space in there, and that's how we bring neighborhoods back. It's not by the big marquee Cadillac projects. It's by doing a couple dozen small projects. But I'll tell you this, those small projects are a lot of work. So sometimes we sort of show a bias towards, let's just do one big project, less headaches. But that we got to have a lot more headaches in order to make the city of Buffalo more, you know, well-rounded, and make sure Jefferson Avenue develops, Grant Street develops, Fillmore develops, and you know, Seneca Street develops. So, but we have to embrace, you know, a love of small projects, because that's what's going to lift us back up.
And I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, business development. And so I'm a small business owner. I'm on Buffalo's East Side. I'm actually at the Exchange at Beverly Gray, where I lease space. And I left my full-time job to pursue small business ownership. And so when you think about generational wealth, because you started to talk about that and the differences between specific communities, there is a wealth gap. And we often talk about small business ownership as a means to pursuing generational wealth and passing that down. And so I know at the state level, you are a chair of the Economic Development and Small Business Commerce. I guess that's one of the committees that you lead now. I want to get an understanding of what you've learned at that level and what you think you can pass down at the city level as well, and so specifically to, you know, small businesses.
Yeah. So what I've, you know, learned at that level is it's easier to give money to big businesses than it is to small businesses. Like think Tesla. You know, we dumped almost $1 billion into Tesla. Imagine if we had taken that money and spread it across the city of Buffalo to our commercial districts. You know, and you know, how do you help commercial districts? Well, you got to make sure we keep the Main Street programs going, where you can get money to invest in your Main Street business. But we recently had a hearing in Albany, where we spend billions of dollars statewide on economic development a year, and the National Federation of Independent Businesses came in, and you would think they'd be there cheerleading, saying we need to keep spending money this way. But that's a group that represents florists, small accountants, roofers, Main Street businesses, and they testified that none of the state programs help their business owners, that the state programs are all billed at these big Cadillac programs, but they're ignoring our Main Streets. So what I've been endeavoring to do on the state level is to sort of turn that around and to make it so programs are accessible, you know, to Main Street buildings just as they are to regular buildings. And I'll give you this. This should make you angry. Is, you know, we all know Amazon. Last I checked, they weren't hurting. But over the last few years, Amazon's received over $300 million of public money. But no public money is going in to small businesses to help people, you know, get off their feet. So we got to keep, like, Sue McCartney's group at Buff State, the Small Business Development Center. Mm-hmm. We got to make sure they're strong. But we also have to take away some of the, you know, the hindrances of the small businesses faced. You know, I've definitely secured more funding for our business districts, delivering resources in that end. But it's still the missing piece is we need to figure out how we can directly benefit in things like capital investment, you know, to help do build-outs. Like the good people from the Golden Cup were never going to generate enough capital to redo their building on Jefferson. So New York State, stepped in. But then the next step really is, how do we do like a 43 North type program, but not just for, you know, big businesses that are about to poise into something giant? Because we know more people work at small businesses than all the big businesses combined.
And so you talk to like folks at Golden Cup, because they're a neighbor next to where we lease space at, and they talk about the cost of a cup of coffee, right? And how they haven't necessarily been able to raise their prices because there's folks in the neighborhood that might not be able to pay that, right? And so when I think about workforce specifically and programs around workforce development, how do you envision the city being a player in that space? You know, already it employs a lot of folks. And so what does that look like from your lens?
Look, we spend a lot of money on job training, right? We have the Buffalo Employment Training Center. The county has a training center. New York State has training centers. Mm-hmm. But we often miss the mark. So we have to focus more in like a Northland-style programs. But we need to be able to capacitize that. So we have a mismatch in the city of Buffalo. You know, there's a lot of areas, economic sectors, where minority communities are wickedly underrepresented. And the only economic sectors where minorities are overrepresented are the lowest paid sections of our economy. Right. So we need to lift people out of full-time jobs that don't pay enough money to pay the rent, to put a roof on their house, and, you know, to take summer vacations. So we need to have job training programs that take people who are currently working full-time, help scaffold them to get them into the higher paid jobs that are available in our region.
All right, Sean, we have about a minute left. Sell our listeners why they should vote for you as mayor for the city of Buffalo.
So here's the good and the bad, right? So the good is when you hear former Congressman Higgins talk about the city of Buffalo. We have all these great attributes. You know, we're on the Niagara River. We're on Lake Erie. We have beautiful architect. We have great museums. We have beautiful parks. So we have all this great foundation, but we haven't been able to, on a day-to-day basis, put it together for the people of the city of Buffalo. You know, you got to start with the small things. You got to be able to replace our curbs. You got to be able to fill our potholes. You got to be able to open our pools, our after-school centers, the basic stuff. But when you get doing the basics, you also have to concentrate on the big issues, you know, the disparate health outcomes in the city of Buffalo. You're not growing Buffalo and keeping it just the way it is. You can't do it. Our rampant segregation, our income inequality. So you have to take care of the small issues, but at the same time, you have to pull your head out of the sand and realize that we have big issues that we need to deal with also. People in the city of Buffalo love the city of Buffalo. We know the problems we have. People just want things to be fixed. They want things to work. And they also want us to see us to actually exploit some of our great natural resources, you know, that we have in the investments that people made here 100 years ago to really allow, you know, Buffalo to flourish. Not just downtown Buffalo, not just the west side, not just the east side, but all of the city of Buffalo.
Thank you, Sean. That's Sean Ryan, state senator, who's running for mayor next year. I'm Jim Fink.
And I'm Ekua Menzedu from Clementine Gold Group.
Thank you, and have a good rest of the day.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.